with another, apparently. She didn't want to think about that. She finished the beer, then gathered up her plate and Hypaxia's to toss in the trash. She quickly paid their tab, and as she pocketed the receipt, she asked the queen, "Wanna walk a little? It's not as hot as it was."
"I'd like that very much."
They kept silent, unnoticed by those around them as they entered the alley. Ethan fell into step a polite distance behind. The dragon, if she was there, was nowhere to be seen.
"So, your brother told you of the situation with my mother's coven, then?"
"Yeah."
"That sucks. I'm sorry."
They reached the river a block away and turned down the quay. Dry, warm wind rustled the palms lining it. Hypaxia studied the stars.
"I had such visions for what the future would be like, of witches returning to power, of being with the person who I..."
She cleared her throat. "You're seeing someone?" Bryce asked, brows lifting. The queen's face shuddered.
"No."
Hypaxia blew out a long breath.
"The relationship wasn't possible anymore. I might have continued it, but it was not."
"They didn't want to." Bryce blinked. If Hypaxia was in love with someone else, fuck. "Poor Rune," she said. Hypaxia smiled sadly.
"I think your brother wants to marry me as little as I want to marry him."
"Rune's hot, though. So are you. Maybe the attraction will kick in." Bryce owed her brother at least an attempt to try to play up his good attributes. A laugh.
"It takes far more than that."
"Yeah, but he's a good guy. Like, a really good guy. And I can't believe I'm even saying this, but while I'm sure the person you love is great, you really couldn't do better than Rune."
"I'll remember those words."
Hypaxia toyed with one of her long curls.
"The engagement to your brother was an attempt to prevent my mother's coven from gaining too much power."
Bryce said, "But you said you want the witches to return to power. Or is it that you want your people to regain their power, but you want your mother's coven to be excluded from that?" Hypaxia nodded gravely. Bryce's brows knit. "Aren't the witches already powerful?"
"Not as we once were.
For generations now, mighty bloodlines have run dry, magic withering, like they are siphoned into nothing.
My mother's coven has no interest in discovering why. They only want us to become even more subservient to the Asteri."
This female had freed Hunt in pure defiance of the Asteri. Was Hypaxia a rebel? Did she dare ask her? How much had Ethan and Rune told her yesterday? Dark mists curled on the other side of the river. She asked quietly,
"Did your mom summon your tutors from the Bone Quarter? Or another eternal resting place?" "Such things did not exist when my tutors walked the earth."
Bryce gaped. "Your tutors predate the Asteri's arrival?" Hypaxia narrowed her eyes in warning for Bryce to keep her voice down.
"Yes, they were already long dead when the Northern Rift opened. They remember a time before the Asteri, when Parthos still stood?"
Bryce ventured.
"Yes. One of my tutors, Polania, taught mathematics and science at its academy. She was born in the city surrounding it, and died there too. So did generations of her family."
"The Asteri don't like people talking about these things. That humans accomplished so much before their arrival."
"They are classic conquerors."
Hypaxia gazed toward the Bone Quarter.
"They have conquered even death in this world. Spirits that once rested peacefully are now herded into these zones."
Bryce started.
"You know about that?" "The dead speak to me of their horrors. When my mother died, I had to do some things that... Let's say my mother's coven was not happy that I found a way for my mother to avoid going to an eternal resting place. Even if doing so sacrificed my ability to speak with her forever."
Shadows darkened her eyes.
"But I could not send her to a zone like the Bone Quarter, not when I knew what would become of her."
"Why not tell everyone? Why not tell the whole world?"
"Who would believe me?" Do you know what the Asteri would do to me, to my people? They would slaughter every single witch to punish me. My mother knew it as well, and also chose not to say anything. If you are wise, you will not either. I shall help Ethan Holstrom and his kin, as best I can on the equinox. But there are limits.
Bryce halted by the rail overlooking the night-dark river. Where did the dead go before the Asteri arrived? Did your tutors ever tell you that? Her mouth softened into a smile.
No, but they told me it was good, peaceful.
Do you think the souls that are harvested here ever wind up there?
I don't know.
Bryce blew out a breath. Well, this is the most depressing girl talk I've ever had.
It's the first girl talk I've ever had.
Normal girls dish about normal shit.
You and I are not normal girls.
No, they weren't. They were a queen and a princess, meeting as equals, talking about things that could get them killed.
It can be very lonely to wear a crown,
Hypaxia said quietly, as if reading her thoughts.
But I'm glad to have you to speak with, Bryce.
Me too.
And she might not be anywhere near done fighting her father's bullshit, but it was a comfort to know that she had the Witch Queen on her side at least, and other allies. Ethan stood guard 20 feet behind. His stare met hers, bright in the dimness. She opened her mouth to call him over, to ask how much he'd heard. But at that moment, a massive scaled gray beast leapt over the key railing, and before Bryce could shout, it barreled into Ethan and closed its jaws around his throat. Chapter 55. Bryce didn't have time to scream, didn't have time to do anything but fall back on her ass, scrambling away from Ethan, his blood spraying, gurgling as his throat. The beast, the demon, ripped out Ethan's throat, tipped back its broad, flat head and swallowed the chunk of flesh between black, curved fangs. Get up, Hypaxia ordered, from where she stood above Bryce, a knife in her hand. Where it had come from, Bryce had no idea.
Ethan. She couldn't do this again, couldn't endure it.
The demon stepped away from Ethan's twitching, dying body. Would he survive that kind of a blow? If the demon had poison on its fangs like the Crystallos, this thing might have been some relative. Its matte gray scales flowed over a muscular, low-slung body, a tail as long as Bryce whipped back and forth, its spiked end carving grooves in the stone. People along the quay, the streets beyond, started fleeing. Her body couldn't move. Shock. She knew this was shock, and yet, help would come soon. Someone, either in the Ox or the 33rd, would arrive. Hunt.
Get up,
Hypaxia said, gripping Bryce under a shoulder to haul her to her feet. Slowly, the Witch Queen dragged Bryce back. A snarl reverberated through the stones behind them. Bryce twisted to find a second demon, twin to the one that had ripped out Ethan's throat, approaching at their rear. The two of them were closing in on the prey, now trapped between them. Fear, cold and sharp, sliced through her, shattered the shock rooting her into uselessness, clarified her fogged, bloody vision.
Back to back, Hypaxia ordered, voice low and calm.
One knife, that's all they had. Why the fuck didn't she carry a gun? But Ethan had a gun. On his lifeless body, Bryce could make out the gun he hadn't had a chance to draw. How many rounds did it hold? If the demon was fast enough to sneak up on him, though, she didn't stand a chance. Not unless...
What kind of magic do you have?
Bryce murmured, pressing her back to Hypaxia as she eyed the second demon. She'd kill these fuckers, rip them apart piece by piece for this.
Does it matter?
Hypaxia asked, angling her knife at the first demon.
Is it energy?
Like lightning?
Healing and wind, and the necromancy, which I can't even begin to explain.
Can you pinpoint it? Shoot it into me?
What?
I need a charge, like a battery, Bryce said, the scar on her chest glowing faintly. The demon before her bayed to the night sky, her ears rang.
To do what?
Just do it now, or we are going to be royally fucked. The first demon howled. Like so many beings from the pit, their eyes were milky, blind, as if they'd been in the dark so long they'd ceased to need them. So blinding wasn't an option. But a bullet? You think a knife is going to work on them? Bryce demanded. Hypaxia guided them toward the key railing. 3 feet remained until there was nowhere to go but the water. Bryce shuddered, remembering the Sobeks that had attacked them that day fleeing the Bone Quarter. Use your healing power and hit my fucking chest, Bryce snarled. Trust me. They had no other choice. If Hunt's power had charged her up, maybe. The creature nearest the Witch Queen lunged, snapping. The two females slammed into the railing. No! Bryce shouted, and Hypaxia whirled, shoving a shining palm to Bryce's chest. Warmth flowed into her, soft and gentle and... Stars erupted in Bryce's mind. Supernovas. Ethan. It was as easy as taking a step. One breath, Bryce stood against the key. The next, she was beside Ethan's body, behind the creatures who pivoted toward her, sensing that her scent had shifted away. Hypaxia tapped the golden brooch on the lapel of her jacket. With a woomph of air, her broom appeared before her, and the queen leapt onto it, shooting skyward. Bryce grabbed the gun from Ethan's waistband, clicked off the safety, and fired at the closest demon. Brain matter splattered as the bullet plowed between its sightless eyes. The second demon charged at her, Hypaxia forgotten as she hovered on her broom in the air above. Bryce fired, and the beast dodged the blow, as if it could feel the air itself parting for the bullet. It was on to her, aware of what weapon she bore. The demon leapt for her, and Bryce rallied her power, stepped from her place beside Ethan's body to the open walkway behind the charging creature. It hit the ground and spun, claws gouging deep. Bryce fired again, and the demon used those preternatural senses to veer left at the last millisecond, taking the bullet in the shoulder. The shot did nothing to slow it. The demon jumped for her again, and Bryce moved, slower this time. Hypaxia's power was already funneling out of her. 30 feet behind you, Hypaxia ordered from above, pointing, and Bryce gritted her teeth, mapping out how to get there. The dance she had to lead the creature into. It leapt, claws out, and Bryce teleported back 10 feet. It leapt again, and she moved, body shaking against the strain. Another 10 feet back. She could make the last jump, had to make the last jump as the demon sprang. Roaring, Bryce flung all of herself, all that remained of the spark of Hypaxia's power, into her desire to step, to move. She appeared 10 feet back, and the creature, sensing her pattern, jumped. It didn't look up, didn't see the Witch Queen plunging to the earth, dagger aloft. Bryce hit the ground as Hypaxia jumped from her broom and landed atop the beast, slamming her blade into its skull. Witch and demon went down, the former astride it like a horse from hell, but the demon didn't so much as twitch. Scraped palms and knees already healing, Bryce panted, shaking. She'd done it. She'd... Ethan. Oh, gods, Ethan. On wobbling legs, she scrambled to her feet and rushed for him. His throat was healing, slowly. He stared unseeingly at the night sky. Move back, Hypaxia said, breathing heavily, broom discarded beside her. Let me see him. He needs a medwitch. I am a medwitch, Hypaxia said, and knelt. Wings filled the skies, sirens blaring from the streets. Then Isaiah was there, hands on Bryce's shoulders. Are you all right? Is that Holstrom? Where's Athalar? The rapid-fire questions pelted her. I'm here, Hunt said from the darkness, landing with enough force that the ground shook. Lightning skittered over the concrete. He assessed Bryce, then Ethan, the wolf's body glowing under Hypaxia's hands. Then he registered the two demons and went pale. Those? He scanned Bryce again. You know what they are? Isaiah asked. Hunt rushed to Bryce and tucked her into him. She leaned into his warmth, his strength. He said quietly, Deathstalkers.
personal pets of the Prince of the Pit. They were seen in Nenya 4 days ago. They somehow crossed the border.
Bryce's stomach hollowed out. Isaiah held up a hand to keep the other advancing angels and ox at bay.
You think these two came here all the way from Nenya? And why attack Bryce?
Bryce wrapped her arms around Hunt's waist, not caring that she was clinging. If she let go, her knees might very well give out. Hunt lied smoothly.
Isn't it obvious? Hell's got a score to settle with her after this spring. They sent their best assassins to kill her.
Isaiah seemed to buy that theory, because he said to Bryce, How did you even bring them down?
Ethan had a gun. I got a lucky shot on the first. Queen Hypaxia took care of the second.
It was mostly true.
There,
Hypaxia announced, stepping back from Ethan's healed, limp body.
He'll wake when he's ready.
She gathered her broom, and with a touch, or some of her witch power, it shrank back into the golden brooch of Kathona. She pinned it onto her gray jacket as she pivoted to Isaiah.
Can your soldiers transport him to the witch's embassy? I'd like to tend to him personally until he's conscious.
Bryce couldn't argue with that. But there was no one to call for Ethan. No family, no friends, no pack. No one except... She dialed Rune. Deathstalkers. He should have sent out a warning the moment he'd ID'd the tail of one in that photo from Nenya. Should have had every soldier in this city on alert. But Bryce, by some miracle, she didn't have a scratch on her. It wasn't possible. Hunt knew how fast the Deathstalkers were. Even Faye couldn't outrun them. They'd been bred that way by Apollyon himself. Hunt waited to speak until he and Bryce stood in the golden hall of the witch's embassy. Ethan had already been handed over from the two angels who'd flown him here to Rune and Declan, who'd gently carried the wolf into a small room to recover.
So, let's hear the real story.
Bryce turned to him, eyes bright with fear and excitement.
I did it. Teleported.
She explained what Hypaxia had done, what she had done.
That was one hell of a risk.
He wasn't sure whether to kiss her or shake her for it.
My options were limited, Bryce said, crossing her arms.
Through the open doorway, Rune and Dec set Ethan on the cot, Hypaxia instructing them to position his body in a certain way.
Where the hell was the dragon?
Fucking coward told Holstrom she'd climb up to the rooftops to provide a second set of eyes, and then bailed,
Flynn said, face dark as he stepped into the hall.
Do you blame her?
Bryce said.
Yeah,
Flynn glowered.
We did her a favor and she fucked us over. She could have torched those demons.
Before Bryce could counter, the Lord stalked away with a disgusted shake of his head. Bryce waited until the hall was empty again before asking Hunt.
You think these were the appetizers the Prince of the Pit threatened to send to test us?
Yes, they answer only to him.
But they were about to kill me. He didn't seem to want us dead, and it seems reckless to do it just to test me.
She gestured between them.
His epic opponents, remember?
Rune stepped into the hall and murmured, Unless you weren't the one they were supposed to kill. He jerked his chin toward Hypaxia, lowering his voice. He assessed the quiet halls of the embassy, no witches in sight, before saying,
Maybe her coven summoned them, somehow.
Bryce frowned.
Why?
Rune paced a step.
You'd be the perfect cover story. She was walking beside someone Hell has a score to settle with, someone who'd pissed Hell off this spring.
Deathstalkers imply the Prince of the Pit's involvement.
If she'd died, all eyes would be on Hell. Everyone would think they'd targeted you, and she'd be the unfortunate additional loss.
What about Ethan, though?
Hunt picked up Rune's thread.
Also collateral. After this spring, I doubt Sabine would be stupid enough to summon a demon. That leaves our enemies or Hypaxia's. But given what Apollyon threatened, I'd say odds are it was him. Maybe he was willing to take the risk that you'd die during his little test. Maybe he supposed that if you died, you wouldn't be worthy of battling him anyway.
Bryce rubbed her face.
So where does that leave us?
Hunt interlaced her fingers.
It leaves us with the realization that this city needs to be on high alert, and you need to be armed at all times.
She glared. That's not helpful. Rune wisely kept his mouth shut.
You didn't have any weapons tonight, Hunt snarled. You two had one knife between you. You were lucky Ethan carried that gun, and you were even luckier in your guess that Hypaxia could charge up your ability to teleport.
Rune grunted his agreement.
So that's how you did it, Declan said, walking back into the hall.
The warrior shut the door behind him, giving Hypaxia and Ethan privacy. Bryce sketched a bow.
It'll be my special solo act during the school talent show.
Declan snorted, but Rune was assessing her.
You really teleported?
Bryce explained everything again, and Hunt couldn't keep himself from tugging her closer. When she finished, Rune echoed Hunt's words.
We got lucky tonight. You got lucky tonight.
Bryce winked at Hunt, and I plan to get lucky again.
Gross,
Rune said as Declan snickered. Hunt flicked Bryce's nose and said to Rune,
Let's set up watches around the apartment and this embassy. Assign your most trusted soldiers. I'll get Isaiah and Naomi on it, too.
The 33rd and the Ox teaming up to guard little old me?
Bryce crooned. I'm flattered.
This is not the time to debate Alpha Hole politics, Hunt ground out. Those were fucking Death Stalkers.
And I dealt with them.
I wouldn't be so dismissive, he growled. The Prince of the Pit will send hordes of them through the Northern Rift, if he ever gets it fully open, rather than shoving one or two through at a time for fun. They hunt down whoever they're ordered to stalk. They're assassins. You get marked by them for execution, and you are dead.
She blew on her fingers, as if chasing off dust.
All in a day's work for me, then.
Quinlan.
Rune started laughing.
What?
Hunt demanded. Rune said, You know who I was talking to before I got your call?
My father.
Bryce went still, and Hunt knew it was bad. Rune grinned at him.
Your father-in-law.
Excuse me?
Rune didn't stop grinning.
He told me the most wonderful news.
He winked at Bryce.
You must be so happy.
Bryce groaned and turned to Hunt.
It's not official.
Oh, it's official,
Rune said, leaning against the wall beside the door.
What the fuck are you two talking about?
Hunt growled.
Rune smirked at Hunt. She's been bandying about the royal name, apparently, which means she's accepted her position as princess. And as you're her mate, that makes you son-in-law to the Autumn King. And my brother.
Hunt gaped at him. Rune was completely serious. Bryce blurted,
Did you ask him about Cormac? The Autumn King insists the engagement is still on.
Rune's amusement faded.
I don't see how it could be. I'm sorry,
Hunt cut in,
but what the fuck?
His wings splayed.
You're now officially a princess?
Bryce winced.
Surprise!
Chapter 56 Ethan groaned, his body giving a collective throb of pain.
His throat. Jaws and fangs and claws. The queen. And Bryce.
He lunged up, hand at his neck.
You're safe. It's over.
The calm female voice came from his right, and Ethan twisted, finding himself on a narrow bed in a gilded room he'd never seen. Queen Hypaxia sat in a chair beside him, a book in her lap, wearing her blue robes once again. No sign of the casual modern female he'd been trailing earlier. His voice was like gravel as he asked,
You all right?
Very well, as is Miss Quinlan. You're at my embassy, in case you were wondering.
Ethan sagged back against the bed.
He'd been ambushed like a fucking novice. He'd always prided himself on his reflexes and instincts, but he'd had his ass handed to him.
The queen opened her mouth, but he demanded,
What about the dragon?
Hypaxia's mouth tightened.
Ariadne was nowhere to be found. It appears she has taken her chances with the law and fled.
Ethan growled.
She bailed?
The dragon had claimed she couldn't, that there was nowhere in Midgard she could go without the astronomer finding her.
Gods, one guarding assignment and he'd fumbled it, badly.
He deserved to have his throat ripped out, deserved to be lying here, like a weak fucking child for his ineptitude. Hypaxia nodded gravely.
The city cameras picked it up. Ariadne left the moment I entered the pizza shop, but nothing more. Even the cameras can't find her.
She's likely halfway across the planet by now,
Ethan grumbled. The Fey males were going to be so pissed.
You liberated her from the ring, from serving a terrible master. Are you surprised that she is not willing to wait for someone to purchase her again?
I thought she'd be grateful at least.
Hypaxia frowned with disapproval, but she said,
She is a dragon, a creature of earth and sky, fire and wind. She should never have been contained or enslaved. I hope she stays free for the rest of her immortal life.
The tone brooked no room for argument, and, well, Ethan agreed with the queen anyway. He sighed, gently rubbing at his tender throat.
So, what the fuck attacked us? A demon?
Yes, an extremely deadly one.
She explained what had happened. Ethan eased into a sitting position once more.
I'm sorry I fucked this one up so badly. I don't like making mistakes like this.
Losing grated on his very soul. The queen and Bryce were safe, but he was a fucking loser.
You have nothing to apologize for, the queen said firmly. Considering the gravity of the situation, I'm assuming your friends know more about the motives behind this attack than they have told me.
Well, she was definitely right on that one. Ethan blew out a breath that set his throat aching. It'd be another few hours until it was totally healed. He had no idea how long it'd take until he forgave himself for fucking up tonight.
So, you can really contact Connor on the autumnal equinox?
He asked quietly, hating that he needed to change the subject. Not that this new one was much better.
Yes,
she angled her head, curls spilling over her shoulder.
You worry for him.
Wouldn't you? I don't care if we've been told that he's, like, off limits. I want to make sure he's okay. I heard what you said to Bryce, about ensuring your mom didn't go to one of the sleeping realms. I want you to do that for him.
He swallowed, then amended,
If you're cool with that, Your Majesty.
Her eyes twinkled with amusement.
I shall do my best.
Ethan sighed again, staring at the tall windows on the other side of the room, the drapes shut for the night.
I know you're already doing a lot for me, but the astronomer has a wolf enslaved to him as one of his mystics. Is there anything you could do for her?
What do you mean?
He took it as a good sign that she didn't say no. He said,
I can't just leave her there.
Why is it your burden to free her?
Wolves don't belong in cages. That's what the mystic's tanks are, watery cages.
And what if she wants to be in there?
How could she?
Before the queen could answer, he plowed on.
I know it's random. There are so many other people suffering out there. But it doesn't sit right with me.
He'd screwed up enough in the past 2 years. He wouldn't drop the ball on this. An alpha wolf in captivity. The idea was abhorrent. He'd do whatever he could to help her. She seemed to read whatever lay on his face.
You're a good male, Ethan Holstrom.
You met me yesterday.
And after tonight, he sure as fuck didn't deserve that claim.
But I can tell.
She touched his hand gently.
I do not think there is much I can do to help the mystic, unfortunately, beyond what your other royal friends might be able to accomplish.
Ethan knew she was right. He'd find another way then, somehow.
Well, this is fucked.
It sure is, said a male voice from the doorway, and Ethan blinked, surprised to find Flynn and Declan standing there, Therian a step behind them.
Hey,
Ethan said, bracing for the ridicule, the ribbing, the questioning about how the hell he'd mangled protection duty. But Declan bowed his head to the queen before sauntering over to Ethan.
How are you feeling, pup?
Fine, Ethan said, then admitted, a little sore.
Getting your throat ripped out does that to a male,
Flynn said. He winked at Hypaxia.
But she fixed you up pretty good, didn't she?
Hypaxia smiled up at him. Therian, lingering by the door, chuckled. Ethan said quietly,
Yeah, she did.
Declan clapped his hands together.
Okay, well, we just wanted to make sure you were all right.
Hypaxia added,
They've been in and out all night.
You'll give them away as big old softies, Pax,
Therian said to the queen, who shook her head at the name, as if Therian often used it to annoy her. Declan asked the queen,
When can he come home?
Home.
The word rang through Ethan. He'd been their roommate for only a week and a half.
When had he last had a true home?
The den hadn't been one since his parents had died.
But that was genuine concern on Declan's face, on Flynn's.
Ethan swallowed hard.
Tomorrow morning, Hypaxia said, and rose from her chair. I'll do my final check then, and if you're cleared, you'll be on your way, Ethan.
I'm supposed to guard you,
Ethan countered, his voice thick. But she patted his shoulder before walking to the door. Therian fell into step beside her, like he planned to converse in private. The Witch Queen said to Ethan as she and the mayor left,
Take tomorrow off.
Ethan opened his mouth to object, but she'd already left, the mayor with her. Flynn slung himself into the seat the queen had vacated.
Don't tell Rune, but I'd love to have that female do a check on me.
Ethan scowled, but refrained from explaining what he'd overheard. The queen loved another and seemed pretty cut up about it. But what good was love in the face of duty? He'd keep Hypaxia's romance quiet. She'd agreed to her union with Rune, and he could do nothing but admire that she'd chosen to do so, even when her heart lay with someone else.
Fuck, he knew how that felt.
He blocked out Bryce's face from his mind. Declan was saying to Flynn,
Do yourself a favor and don't hit on her, or tease her.
She's Rune's fiance, Flynn said, propping his boots on the edge of Ethan's bed and tucking his hands behind his head. That entitles me to some ribbing. Ethan laughed, eyes stinging. No one ever joked in Amelie's pack. He might coax a smile from Perry every once in a while, but mostly they were all serious, humorless. They never laughed at themselves. But these guys had come to check on him, not to rip into him for failing. They didn't even seem to view it as a failure. Flynn asked a shade seriously.
You're really feeling all right, though?
Ethan mastered himself.
Yeah.
Good,
Declan said. Ethan's throat tightened. He hadn't realized how much he missed it, people having his back, caring if he lived or died. The pack of devils had been that for him, yes, but his sunball team, too. He hadn't spoken to any of them since Connor's death. Flynn's eyes softened slightly, as if seeing something on Ethan's face, and Ethan straightened, clearing his throat. But Flynn said,
We got you, Wolf.
Why?
The question slipped out before Ethan could wonder whether he should ask. But there were probably dozens of Fae who'd spent years trying to squeeze into the trio that was Rune, Flynn, and Declan. Why they'd brought Ethan into their little circle was beyond him. Flynn and Dec swapped glances. The latter shrugged.
Why not?
I'm a wolf. You're Fae.
So old-fashioned,
Flynn winked.
I had you pegged as more progressive than that.
I don't want your pity, Ethan said.
Declan drew back.
Who the fuck said anything about pity?
Flynn put up his hands.
We're only friends with you because we want good sunball tickets.
Ethan looked between the males, then burst out laughing.
All right, he rubbed at his sore throat again. That's a good enough reason for me.
Rune monitored his sister as they waited for Athalar to finish briefing some senior members of the 33rd on what had gone down with the Deathstalker. It felt like last spring all over again. Granted, Micah had been the one summoning those Crystallos demons, but this couldn't be good. The horn was tattooed on Bryce's back now. What wouldn't Hell do to attain it? The answer, Bryce said to Rune, is that I'm not going to allow any sort of security detail. Rune blinked and said silently,
I wasn't thinking that.
She glared at him sidelong.
I could feel you brooding about the attack. It's the logical conclusion from an overly aggressive Fey male.
Overly aggressive?
Protective?
Bryce, this is some serious ass shit.
I know.
And you're a princess now. An official one.
She crossed her arms, watching Hunt talk with his friends.
I know.
How do you feel about it?
How do you feel about it?
Why the fuck would it make any difference what I feel?
He scowled at her.
Because now you have to share the crown.
I'm glad I can share it with you. Selfishly, pathetically glad, Bryce. But isn't this what you wanted to avoid?
It is. Her mental voice hardened into sharp steel.
Are you going to do something about it?
Maybe.
Tread carefully. There are so many laws and rules and shit that you don't know about. I can fill you in, but this is a whole new level of the game. You have to be on alert.
She faced him, offering a broad grin that didn't meet her eyes, before taking a few steps toward Athalar.
If dear old dad wants a princess, she said, looking more like their father than he'd ever witnessed, then he'll get one. Treadwolves prowling the old square,
Hypaxia hissed under her breath to Therian as she peered out the window of her private suite on the second floor of the elegant embassy. Despite the plush furniture, the room definitely belonged to a witch. A small crystal altar to Cathona adorned the eastern wall, covered in various tools of worship. A large obsidian scrying mirror hung above it, and the fireplace built into the southern wall had various iron arms, presumably to hold cauldrons during spells. A royal suite, yes, but a workroom as well.
I hate the sight of them, the queen went on,
the streetlights casting her beautiful face in golden hues.
Those uniforms, the silver dots on their collars.
He wondered how many people ever saw her so unguarded.
Rebel hunters, that's what they are.
Indeed, where they walked, revelers fell silent. Tourists stopped snapping photos. Tell me how you really feel, Pax, Therian said, crossing his arms. The queen whirled toward him.
I wish you'd stop using that nickname. Ever since the summit.
Ever since then, you've missed me using it? He gave her his most charming smile. She rolled her eyes, but he caught the slight curl of her lips. He asked, Have you kept up the tally? How many times has Prince Rune gawked at you since you arrived? She flushed.
He doesn't gawk.
I think our final tally at the summit was 30? 40? She whacked him on the chest.
I missed you, he said, grinning.
She grinned back.
What does your fiancé have to say about that?
She was one of the few people who knew. During their initial meeting at the summit, an accidental encounter late one night when she'd sought some solitude at one of the mayor's subterranean pools and found him seeking the same, they'd spoken of their various obligations. A friendship had immediately sprung up. Therian countered,
What does your fiancé have to say about it?
The witch laughed softly, the sound like silver bells.
You're the one who's been associating with him. You tell me.
He chuckled, but his amusement fell away, his voice becoming serious.
He's concerned enough about you that he told some of us about your coven. Why didn't you tell me?
He'd grab any one of them who harmed her and drown them, slowly. She searched his face. He let her.
What could you have done?
Well, that stung, especially because she was right. He let out a long sigh.
He wished he could tell her,
about the fact that he'd bought himself a small stretch of freedom, that he would only go back to the Blue Court to keep up appearances, that he'd pretend Emile Renast was still on the loose for as long as he could. But would he go back after that? Could he go back? Maybe he'd get in touch with the Ocean Queen's people and beg for asylum. Maybe they'd shelter his family, too. He'd opened his mouth to speak when a ripple went through the street below. People stopped. Some pressed against buildings.
What the fuck are they doing here?
Tharian growled. Mordok and the Hammer stalked down the street, Wolf and Angel sneering at all in their path. They seemed to savor the quiet and dread that trailed in their wake. Hypaxia's brows raised.
Not friends of yours?
He put a hand on his heart. You wound me, Pax. The queen's mouth thinned as Pollux and Mordok crossed the intersection.
It's an ill omen to see them here.
Maybe they want to make sure all is well, considering what attacked tonight.
Mighty Ogenus, creatures straight from the pit.
He'd been enjoying a drink with a pride of lioness shifters at a wine bar when he'd gotten the call. He'd come here, claiming an investigative visit from the Blue Court, but...
You sure you're all right?
He asked, glad to pivot from the two monsters on the street.
I'm fine, Hypaxia said, turning weary, sad eyes toward him. Miss Quinlan proved herself a valuable ally in a fight.
He liked the idea of the two of them becoming friendly. They'd be a formidable pair against any opponent.
What'd your coven say about the attack?
Tharian asked, glancing to the shut double doors across the room. Pollux and Mordok vanished down the street. As if they'd all been frozen, people suddenly began moving again. None went in the direction the Hammer and the Dreadwolf had gone.
My coven feigned outrage, of course. It's not worth recounting.
Fair enough.
You should get some sleep.
You must be exhausted from healing Holstrom.
Not at all.
Her gaze again lifted to his face.
But you should go. Another few minutes and suspicions will be raised.
Oh? He couldn't resist teasing.
Like what?
She flushed again.
Like we're doing things we shouldn't.
Sounds naughty.
She playfully shoved him toward the door. He let her, walking backward as he said, I'll see you soon, okay? You have my number. Her eyes shone like stars.
Thank you for checking on me.
Anything for you, Pax.
Tharian shut the door behind him and found himself face to face with three witches, all members of her coven, if his memory of the summit served him, all cold-faced and unamused.
Ladies, he said, inclining his head.
None of them answered, and as they converged on the queen's suite with a knock on her door, he suppressed the instinct to return to her side. But it wasn't his place, and he still had one more task tonight. First, though, he needed a dip in the Istros to make sure his fins stayed intact. 30 minutes later, still wet, Tharian walked up to the peeling front door of the near-collapsing house off Archer Street, music blasting from the windows despite the late hour. Tharian knocked, loudly enough to be heard over the bass. A moment later, the door opened. Tharian smiled crookedly at Rune and waved to Tristan Flynn and Declan Emmett standing in the foyer behind him.
Got space for one more roommate?
Chapter 57 Hunt waited until he and Bryce had entered the apartment, the door firmly shut behind them, before he said,
I'm a prince now.
Bryce slumped onto the couch.
Welcome to the club.
Your father really did this?
She nodded glumly.
My mom is going to freak.
Hunt stalked to the couch.
What about you, Bryce? Your mom can deal with it. I can deal with this, believe it or not. But are you okay?
She only stroked Syrinx's coat. He scented salt and water then, and sat on the new coffee table, lifting her chin between his thumb and forefinger to find tears running down her cheeks, ones he had no doubt she'd been holding back for hours. He'd turn the Autumn King into smoldering carrion for putting those tears, the fear and panic and sorrow in her eyes.
I spent my whole life avoiding this, and I just feel...
She wiped angrily at her face. I feel so fucking stupid for having walked into his net.
You shouldn't. He bent the rules to his will. He's a snake.
He's a snake and now technically, legally my king. She choked on a sob.
I will never have a normal life again. I'll never be free of him and...
Hunt gathered her into his arms, moving to the couch and pulling her into his lap.
We'll fight him on this. You want a normal life? A life with me? We'll make it happen. You're not alone. We'll fight him together.
She buried her face against his chest, tears splashing onto the black armor of his battle suit. He stroked her silken hair, letting the smooth strands slide through his fingers.
I could handle the Starborn shit. I could handle the magic, she said, voice muffled against his chest. But this? I can't fucking handle this.
She lifted her head, dread and panic flooding her expression.
He owns me. I'm chattel to him. If he wanted me to marry Cormac tonight, he could sign the marriage documents without even my presence. If I wanted a divorce, he'd be the one to grant it. Not that he would. I'm a commodity. Either I belong to him, or I belong to Cormac. He can do whatever he wants, and no amount of bravado from me can stop it.
Lightning skittered down his wings. I'll fucking kill him.
And what will that do, beyond get you executed?
He leaned his brow against hers.
We'll think of a way out of this.
Hypaxia said only the Asteri could override him. Considering our status with them, I doubt they'll help.
Hunt blew out a long breath, tightened his arms around his mate. He'd slaughter anyone who tried to take her from him. King, prince, fey, or Asteri. He'd fucking kill...
Hunt?
He blinked. Your eyes went all... rage, Daisy. She sniffled.
Sorry.
The last thing she needed right now was to have to handle his fury, too. He kissed her cheek, her temple, her neck. She rested her brow on his shoulder, shuddering. Syrinx whimpered from where he had cuddled up on her other side. For long minutes, Hunt and Bryce sat there. Hunt savored every place his body touched hers, the warmth and scent of her, racked his mind for anything he might do, any path out of this. Her fingers curled against the nape of his neck. He loosened his grip, pulling back to scan her face. Starlight and fire sparked there.
Tell me that look means you came up with some brilliant yet painless way out of this, he said.
She kissed him softly.
You're not going to like it.
Rune wasn't at all shocked when he found himself standing before that mental couch. After the night he'd had, nothing could shock him. On the bridge, Day surveyed Rune without saying a word. Somehow he could have sworn she sensed his turmoil. But Rune said,
Anything for me?
He hadn't forgotten their last conversation. She'd told him he was a worthless, do-nothing loser who'd never known sacrifice or pain.
You're angry with me.
I don't care about you enough to be angry with you, he said coldly.
Liar.
The word was an arrow shot between them. The night around him rippled. His temper hadn't improved when he discovered that Ariadne had straight up bailed, fled the moment no one was looking, and gone the gods knew where. He didn't blame the dragon. He was just pissed he hadn't anticipated it. He asked Day,
What the fuck do you want me to say?
I owe you an apology for last time. I'd had a rough day. My temper got the better of me.
You spoke the truth. Why bother apologizing for it?
It's not the truth.
She seemed to struggle for words.
Do you know when I last spoke honestly with someone? When I last spoke to someone as I do to you, as close to my real self as I've ever come?
I'm guessing it's been a while.
She crossed her arms, wrapping them around herself.
Yes.
Can I ask you a question?
She angled her head.
What?
He rubbed his neck, his shoulder.
What do you think makes a good leader?
The question was ridiculous, an essay for a second grader. But after all that had gone down, she didn't balk.
Someone who listens, who thinks before acting, who tries to understand different viewpoints, who does what is right, even if the path is long and hard, who will give a voice to the voiceless.
His father was none of those things, except for thinking before acting. That male had schemes that had been in play for decades, centuries.
Why do you ask?
Rune shrugged.
All this rebel stuff has me thinking about it. Who we'd replace the Asteri with. Who'd we want to replace them with?
She studied him, her gaze a brand on his skin.
What do you think makes a good leader?
He didn't know. Only that he wasn't entirely sure he fit the bill of what she'd described either.
Where would that leave his people? I'm trying to figure that out.
If he became king one day, what sort of ruler would he be? He'd try to do right, but... Silence fell, companionable and comfortable. But then Day blew out a breath, blue flame rippling from her mouth.
I'm not used to this sort of thing.
He lowered himself onto his couch.
What sort of thing?
Friendship.
You consider me a friend?
In a world full of enemies, you're my only friend.
Well, maybe I should give you friendship lessons, because you fucking blow at it.
She laughed, and the sound wasn't entirely joyous.
All right. I deserved that.
He gave her a half smile, even if she couldn't see it.
Lesson one. Don't shit on your friends when you have a bad day.
Right.
Lesson two, your true friends won't mind when you do, so long as you own up to it and apologize, usually in the form of buying them a beer.
Another laugh, softer this time.
I'll buy you a beer then.
Yeah? When you come to visit me?
Yeah, she said, the word echoing. When I come visit you.
He rose and crossed to her couch, peering down at her.
Which will be when, Day?
She tipped her head back, as if staring up at him.
On the autumnal equinox.
Rune stilled.
You... what?
She brought her burning hand to her head, her ear, like she was tucking a strand of hair behind it. She stood, walking around the couch, putting it between them as she said,
I must attend the ball for the archangels. I could meet you somewhere.
I'm going to that ball,
he said, unsure why his voice went hoarse. For her to be invited there, she had to be important, precisely as they'd suspected.
The equinox fete is always a masked ball. We can meet there.
She backed up a step as he rounded the couch.
In front of so many?
Why not? We'll both be in masks, and we're both invited to the party, so why would it be suspicious for two people to talk there?
He could have sworn he heard her heart pounding. She asked,
How will I know you?
The party's in the conservatory on the rooftop garden of the Comitium. There's a fountain on the western side of it, right off the stairs from the conservatory. Meet me there at midnight.
But how can I be sure not to mistake someone else for you?
If I think it's you, I'll say day, and if you answer night, we'll know.
We shouldn't.
Rune took a step toward her, his breathing uneven.
Is it so bad if I know who you are?
It jeopardizes everything. For all I know, you could be baiting me for the Asteri.
Look at me, and tell me you think that's true.
She did. Rune came close enough that the heat of her flame warmed his body. And, deciding to hell with it, he reached for her hand. The flame warmed his night skin, but did not burn. The hand beneath the fire was slender, delicate. Her fingers contracted against his own, but he held firm.
I'll be waiting for you.
And if I'm not what you expect?
What do you think I'm expecting?
Again, her fingers twitched, like she'd yank away.
I don't know.
He tugged on her arm, pulling her a little closer. When was the last time he'd had to work for a female's attention like this? Fuck, he was working for it, wasn't he?
He wanted to see her face, know who was bold and brave enough to risk her life again and again to defy the Asteri. Rune stared down at the veil of flame between him and Day.
I want to smell your scent, see you, even for a moment.
That ball will be swarming with our enemies.
Then we won't stay long, but just meet me, all right?
She was silent, as if she were trying to pierce the blanket of stars he wore.
Why?
His voice dropped.
You know why.
She hesitated. Then she said softly,
Yes.
Her flames seemed to reach for his stars and shadows.
Midnight?
She faded into the embers on the wind.
Midnight,
she promised.
Chapter 58. 2 weeks later, Hunt scowled at his reflection in the mirror. He tugged at the white bow tie of his tux, already feeling strangled by the stupid thing. He'd wanted to wear his battle suit to the party, but Bryce had staged an intervention last week and demanded he wear something halfway normal.
Then you can go back to being the predator in the night we all love so much, she'd said.
Hunt growled, giving himself a final once-over before calling across the apartment.
I'm as good as I'm going to get, so let's leave. The van's downstairs.
He sure as fuck couldn't cram his wings into the usual black sedan the Autumn King would have sent for Bryce. But at least the asshole had sent a van instead. Cormac was her official escort to the party, and was no doubt waiting in the vehicle. It had likely been Cormac who'd convinced the Autumn King to switch to a van, so Bryce's plus one could join them. Bryce had bristled at every new order that had come from the Autumn King. The jewelry she was expected to wear, the clothes, the height of her heels, the length of her nails, the type of car they'd take, who would exit the car first, how she would exit the car. Apparently her ankles and knees were to be forever glued together in public. And lastly, most outrageously, what and how she was allowed to eat. Nothing. That was the short answer. A fae princess did not eat in public was the long answer. Maybe a sip of soup or one solitary small bite to be polite, and one glass of wine. No hard liquor. Bryce had read the list of commandments one night after they'd fucked in the shower, and had been so wound up that Hunt had gone down on her to take the edge off. He'd taken his time tasting her, savoring each lick of her delicious, enticing sex. Even fucking her at night and before work, he couldn't get enough, would find himself in the middle of the day aching for her. They'd already fucked twice in her office, right on her desk, her dress bunched at her waist, his pants barely unbuckled as he pounded into her. They hadn't been caught, thank the gods. Not just by her co-workers, but by anyone who'd report it to Cormac, to the Autumn King. She'd already had one battle with her father over Hunt still living here with her. But after tonight? He scooped up the golden mask from where he'd left it on the dresser, so fucking ridiculous and dramatic, and stepped into the great room, toes wriggling in his patent leather shoes. When was the last time he'd worn anything but his boots or sneakers? Never. He'd literally never worn shoes like this. When he was young, it had been lace-up sandals or boots, and then it had been boots for centuries. What would his mother make of this male in the mirror? He strained to recall her smile, to imagine how her eyes might have sparkled. He wished she were here, not only to see him, but to know that all she'd struggled to provide had paid off, to know that he could take care of her now. Bryce let out a whistle from the other side of the great room, and Hunt looked up, tucking away the old ache in his chest. All the breath left his chest.
Holy shit.
She was, holy shit, he said again, and she laughed. He swallowed.
You're so fucking beautiful.
She blushed, and his head began roaring, cock aching. He wanted to lick that blush, wanted to kiss every inch of her smile. I couldn't bring myself to wear the tiara, Bryce said, lifting a wrist and twirling the crown around it with typical irreverence.
You don't need it.
She really didn't. The sparkling black dress hugged every luscious curve before loosening around the knee, spilling into a train of solid night. The plunging neckline stopped below her breasts, framing the star between them, drawing the eye to the remarkable scar. Black gloves flowed up to her elbows, and her satin-clad fingers toyed with one of the diamond chandelier earrings sparkling against the column of her neck. She'd left her hair down, a diamond comb pinning back one side, the silken mass of hair draping over her opposite shoulder. In the other hand, she clutched the stem of a silver mask. Full blood-red lips smiled at him beneath eyes framed with a swoop of kohl. Simple makeup and utterly devastating.
Solas Quinlan.
You clean up pretty good yourself. Hunt straightened the lapels of his tux.
Yeah?
Wanna stay home and fuck instead? He laughed.
Very regal of you. Any other night, my answer would be yes.
He offered his arm.
Your Highness.
Bryce smirked and took it, pressing close to him. Hunt breathed in her scent, the jasmine of her perfume. She set her tiara on her head at a jaunty angle, the little peak of solid diamond glittering as if lit by starlight. Hunt straightened it for her and led her out the door, toward the world waiting for them. Rune bowed before the seated archangels. Hypaxia at his side bowed as well. He was a lying piece of shit, he'd thought ruefully, as he'd donned a black-on-black tux an hour ago. He'd agreed to be Hypaxia's date to this thing, as her fiancé, and as crown prince he didn't really have a choice but to be here. But he hadn't been able to stop thinking about Day, about whether she'd show up in a mere few hours. He'd already scoped out the fountain through the western doors. It lay in shadow beyond the massive glass conservatory, about 15 feet from the stairs leading out of the building and into the starry night. He hadn't spoken to Day since they'd made their arrangement. He'd tried to talk to her, but she hadn't answered. Would she be here tonight, as promised? Was she already in the packed conservatory? He'd removed his carved black mask to make his formal greeting to the archangels, and as he turned from Celestina and Ephraim, Rune scanned the crowd once more. Beautiful gowns, beautiful ladies. They were masked, but he knew most of them. Of course Day could be someone he knew. He had no idea what to look for, where to even look for her in the vast candlelit space, bedecked in garlands and wreaths of autumnal leaves brought from the colder climes up north. Winged skulls and scythes were interspersed with a rainbow of fall gourds on every table. Day could be anywhere. Security had been insane getting in here. It was the 33rd's show, and they ran it like the paranoid psychos they were. Soldiers stood stationed outside the doors and hovered in the skies. Baxian and Naomi had checked IDs and invites at the doors. They'd remain there all night, even while other members of the Triari reveled. None of Ephraim's people had been tapped to stand guard. Either from a lack of trust or as a privilege, Rune didn't know. There had been no sign of Pippa Spetsos or her Lightfall squadron, or any other Ophian unit recently, but Dreadwolves still prowled the streets and this ballroom. Rune slipped on his mask and said to Hypaxia, "Can I get you anything?" She was resplendent in a royal blue ball gown, her cloudberry crown gleaming amid her dark, upswept hair. Heads turned to remark on her beauty, visible even with the white-winged mask she'd donned. "I'm fine, thank you." She smiled pleasantly. Ethan, in a traditional tux behind her, stepped up, his silver wolf mask glittering in the little first light strung throughout the lush conservatory. "The River Queen's daughter wishes to meet you," he murmured, gesturing to where Therian stood stone-faced beside a stunning, curly-haired young female. The former looked a bit stiff for once, but the female, clad in gauzy turquoise, brimmed with energy, excitement. That had been a minor bomb the other night. Therian had settled quite comfortably into life with Rune and his friends, until he'd gotten the otter's note from the River Queen instructing him to come to this ball with her daughter. "Apparently, the leash only stretches so far," Therian had said when Rune had asked, and that had been that. Hypaxia smiled at Ethan.
"Of course, I'd love to meet her."
Ethan offered his arm, and Hypaxia said to Rune,
I suppose we'll dance later?
Yeah, Rune said, then bowed quickly. I mean, yes, I'd be honored.
Hypaxia gave him a strange, assessing glance, but left with Ethan. He needed a drink, a big fucking drink. He was halfway to one of the 6 open bars throughout the space, each one of them packed, when his sister and Cormac walked in. Bryce looked like a princess, and it had nothing to do with the crown, an heirloom of the Dannon house that their father had ordered her to wear tonight. People stared at her, many unkindly. Or maybe their attention was on Athalar. The angel entered a few steps behind the royal couple. Apparently, he'd been given the night off by Celestina. But how the male could stand walking behind them, seeing Bryce's hand on another male's arm? Athalar's face revealed nothing, though. He was the Umbra Mortis once more. A flash of red across the space drew Rune's gaze. His father made his way toward Bryce and Cormac. The Avalon prince seemed inclined to meet him halfway, but Bryce tugged on his arm and steered them right to the archangels instead. A few fae gasped at the snub, Flynn's parents among them. Flynn, the traitor, had claimed he had a headache to avoid coming tonight. From his parents' pinched faces upon seeing Rune arrive without Flynn in tow, he knew his friend hadn't told them. Too bad for all the eligible young ladies they'd no doubt lined up to woo their son tonight. Ignoring the dismayed fae, Bryce strode right up to the dais where the archangels sat, bypassing the line of well-wishers. No one dared call her out for it. Athalar followed her and Cormac, and Rune noted his father's stormy face and moved closer too. Bryce and Cormac bowed before the archangels, Celestina's brows high as she turned between Hunt and Cormac. Bryce said,
"My congratulations to you both."
"Thank you," Ephraim answered, bored and eyeing the bar. Cormac added,
"Avalon extends its wishes and hopes for your happiness." It had been a relief to discover that Mordok wouldn't be attending the party tonight, wouldn't be able to put faces to the scents he'd probably detected in the alley all those days ago. But the hind was here. Rune had already warned his cousin to stay away from the female, no matter how his blood might howl for vengeance.
"And we extend our wishes to you too," Celestina said.
"Thank you," Bryce said, smiling widely. "Prince Hunt and I plan to be quite happy."
A gasp rippled through the room. Bryce half-turned toward Hunt and extended a hand. The angel walked to her, eyes dancing with wicked amusement. Cormac seemed caught between surprise and fury. The room seemed to be spinning. Bryce wouldn't dare. She wouldn't fucking dare pull a stunt like this. Rune swallowed a laugh of pure shock.
"Prince?" Celestina asked. Bryce looped her arm through Hunt's, pressing close. "Hunt and I are mates." A charming, brilliant smile. "That makes him my prince. Prince Cormac was good enough to escort me tonight, as we've become close friends this month." She turned to the crowd, immediately pinpointed the Autumn King, glaring white-faced at her.
"I thought you told her, father."
Holy shit. She'd played along with the rules so far to reach this point. A public declaration that she was with Hunt, that Hunt was a prince of the Fae. And their father, who hated public scenes. He could either risk calling his own daughter a liar, thus embarrassing himself, or play along.
The Autumn King said into the stunned crowd,
"My apologies, your graces. My daughter's union must have slipped my mind."
His eyes threatened hellfire as he glowered at Bryce.
"I hope her excitement in announcing her union with Hunt Athalar is not interpreted as an attempt to upstage your joy tonight."
"Oh, no,"
Celestina said, covering her mouth with a hand to hide a smile.
"I congratulate and bless you and Hunt Athalar, Bryce Quinlan."
It didn't get more official than that. Ephraim grunted and motioned to the nearest server for a drink. Taking that as her cue, Bryce bowed to them again and pivoted Hunt toward the crowd.
Cormac had the wits to follow, but left them near a pillar after a word to Bryce. He stalked for the Autumn King. So Rune went up to them, and Bryce snorted, "Nice crown." He jerked his chin at her.
"That's all you have to say?"
She shrugged. "What?" But she frowned over his shoulder. "Right. There were a lot of people with Vaneer hearing listening," he'd yell at her later. Though, he didn't really need to yell at all. She'd found her way out of this clusterfuck, her own brilliant, daring way.
"I'm really glad you're my sister," Rune said.
Bryce smiled so broadly it showed all her teeth. Rune shook off his shock and said to Athalar,
"Sweet tux."
He added, just to be a dick,
"Your Highness."
Athalar pulled at his collar.
"No wonder you got all those piercings, if this is how you're expected to dress at these things."
"First rule of being a prince," Rune said, grinning. "Rebel where you can." Considering what they were all doing these days, it was the understatement of the year. Hunt growled, but Ephraim and Celestina stood from their thrones at the rear end of the conservatory, a massive screen dropping from a panel in the glass ceiling. A projector began to hum.
"Friends,"
Celestina's clear voice rang out over the crowd. Anyone still speaking, shut the fuck up.
"We thank you for coming to celebrate our union this lovely evening."
Ephraim's deep voice boomed.
"It is with much joy that Celestina and I announce our mating."
He smiled faintly at his gorgeous mate.
"And with much joy that we remotely welcome our guests of honor."
The lights dimmed, leaving only soft candlelight that made the decorative skulls all the more menacing. Then the screen flickered on, revealing 7 thrones, a sight more harrowing than any skull or scythe. 6 of the thrones were full. The 7th had been left vacant, as always, thanks to the Prince of the Pit. A chill skittered up Rune's arms as the Asteri coldly surveyed the party. Chapter 59. Bryce couldn't get a breath down. The Asteri stared at them all like they could see through the screen, see them gathered here. They must be able to, Bryce realized. Her hand slipped into Hunt's, and he squeezed tight, a gray wing tucking around her. Gods, he was gorgeous tonight. She'd figured this party was the only setting where her father wouldn't dare challenge her, where any union with Hunt could be verified and recognized by archangels. She'd worn and done everything he'd ordered, all so she could get here tonight. Had raced up to the dais upon arriving so that she could announce Hunt as her mate before her father could introduce her as Cormac's bride. Relief and excitement, and a bit of smugness, had coursed through her. Her father would bring down the hammer later, but tonight, she'd celebrate her victory. She knew Hunt had as little interest in being a prince as she did in being a princess, but he'd done it, for her, for them. She'd been about to drag Hunt into a closet or a cloakroom to fuck his brains out when the screen descended. And now, staring at the 6 immortal figures, at Rigelus's boyish face. Thankfully, other people in the room were shaking too. Her heart pounded like a drum. Celestina and Ephraim bowed, and everyone followed suit. Bryce's legs wobbled on her heels as she did so. Hunt squeezed her hand again, but she kept her focus on the ground, hating the primal fear, the terror of knowing that these beings judged them, and with one word they might slay everyone, might slay her family.
"Our congratulations to you, Celestina and Ephraim,"
Rigelus crooned, in that voice that didn't belong to the teenage body his twisted soul inhabited.
"We extend our wishes for a happy mating, and a fertile one."
Celestina and Ephraim lowered their heads in thanks.
"We are grateful for your wisdom and kindness in pairing us," Celestina said.
Bryce tried and failed to detect the undercurrent of her tone. Was it sincere, or was the slight tightness from a lie, or from being before the Asteri?
Octartis, the southern star, the Asteri to Rigelus's right, spoke, her voice like ancient cracking ice.
I understand. Other congratulations are in order, too.
A chill shot along Bryce's spine, as Rigelus said,
Princess Bryce Dannon and Prince Hunt Athalar.
It was an order, a command. The crowd fell back, giving the Asteri a clear shot at them. Oh, gods. Bryce's blood rushed from her face. How did they already know? Had the cameras on their end been running the whole time, letting the Asteri watch and listen unseen? But then the Autumn King was there, bowing at her side.
I present my daughter to you, holy ones, he intoned.
She wondered if he hated bowing to them. It satisfied the fuck out of her to see him do it, but there was no time to dwell on that now. Bryce bowed too as she murmured,
Hail the Asteri.
Cormac appeared on her father's other side, bowing low. As crown prince of Avalon, he had no other choice. He'd been furious at her stunt. Not that she'd ended their engagement, but that she hadn't warned him ahead of time.
Any other surprises tonight, princess?
He'd snapped at her, before striding off to speak to her father.
You broke our deal. I won't forget that.
She hadn't responded, but did the Asteri know one of their fiercest rebels stood before them, playing prince? Did they know how she'd helped him, worked with him? She supposed if they did, they'd all be dead.
And I present her mate and consort, Prince Hunt Athalar,
the Autumn King was saying sharply, his disapproval palpable. He might very well kill her for this, if Cormac didn't do it first. But according to Fey law, she was now Hunt's property, recognized in the past few minutes by both archangels and the Asteri. If it made Hunt uncomfortable, if he resented his new title or the beings before him, he showed no sign as he bowed, his wing brushing over her back.
Hail the Asteri.
Rise,
the Asteri said, and so Bryce, Hunt, and her father did. There were so many eyes upon them, in this room, in that chamber in the Eternal City. Rigelus's especially bore into her. He smiled slightly, like he knew everything she'd done these weeks, every rebel activity, every mutinous thought. Bryce hated herself for lowering her gaze, even as she knew Hunt stared Rigelus down. But the bright hand of the Asteri said,
So many happy unions tonight. It is our wish that you all partake in the revelry. Go, and celebrate Death's Day in peace.
Everyone bowed again, and the screen went dark. More than a few people whimpered, as if they'd been holding in the sound. No one spoke for several seconds as the lights brightened. Then the band began once more slightly off-tempo, like the musicians needed a minute to get their shit together. Even the archangels were a little pale as they took their seats. Bryce faced her father. The Autumn King said in a voice so low no one else could hear.
You little bitch.
Bryce smiled broadly.
It's you little bitch, your highness.
She stalked into the crowd. She didn't miss Hunt smirking at the king, throwing him a wink that clearly said,
Make a move, and I'll fry you, asswipe.
But she had to suck down a few long breaths as she halted at the edge of the dance floor, trying to regain her composure.
You all right?
Hunt asked, gripping her shoulder.
Yes, your highness, she muttered.
He chuckled and leaned to whisper in her ear.
I thought you only called me that in bed, Quinlan.
She did. You are my fucking prince, she'd panted last night, as he drove his cock up into her. Bryce leaned against him, shaking off the last of the Asteri's ice.
I can't believe we did it.
Hunt let out a low laugh.
There's going to be hell to pay.
From her father. But tonight, he could do nothing. Here in front of all these people, he could do nothing at all. So Bryce said,
Dance with me?
He raised a brow.
Really?
You do know how to dance, right?
Of course I do, but...
It's been a long while since I've danced with anyone.
Since Shahar, probably. She interlaced their fingers. Dance with me. The initial steps were stilted, hesitant. His arm slid around her waist, his other hand clutching hers as he led her into the sweet ballad coming from the band. With so many watching, it took a verse or two to get their rhythm.
Hunt murmured, "Just look at me, and fuck all the rest of them."
Her eyes shone with desire and joy, and that spark that was pure Hunt. The star on her chest gleamed on full display. Someone gasped, but Bryce kept her attention on Hunt. He smiled again. It was all that mattered, that smile. They fell into an easy movement, and when Hunt spun her, she smiled back. She whipped into his arms, and Hunt didn't falter a step, sweeping her around the floor. She had the vague sense of Rune and Hypaxia dancing, Celestina and Ephraim, too, of Baxian and Naomi, Isaiah now with them, on guard by the doors. But she couldn't look away from Hunt. He pressed a kiss to her mouth. The entire universe melted away with it. It was only them, would only be them, dancing together, souls twining.
Everything that ever happened to me, it was all so I could meet you, Quinlan. Be here with you. I'm yours, forever.
Her throat tightened, and the star on her chest flared, lighting up the entire conservatory like a small moon. Bryce kissed him back, not caring who saw, only that he was here.
Everything I am is yours, she said against his lips.
Hypaxia seemed distracted as Rune danced with her, trying his best to avoid watching Hunt and Bryce make moon eyes at each other, to avoid hearing the comments that trailed in their wake.
The Umbra Mortis, now a Fey Prince, what a disgrace.
The slurs and nastiness flowed past Rune from Fey mouths, bold enough to run free behind the safety of their masks. Not that the masks would hide their sense. Rune marked each one of them. Athalar was his brother now by law, and Rune didn't put up with people talking shit about his family. The family he liked, anyway. Cormac had already left, slipping into a shadow and teleporting out. A small mercy. Cormac had been so distracted by Bryce's little surprise that he hadn't bothered to confront the Hind. But Rune didn't blame his cousin for bailing. After the stunt Bryce had pulled, Cormac would have been swarmed by Fey families eager to present their daughters. Flynn's parents, a sharp-eyed Sathia in tow, were clearly scouring the ballroom for any hint of the Avalon prince. Rune suppressed his smile at the thought of their fruitless hunt and focused on his partner. Hypaxia seemed to be scanning the crowd. His heart skipped a beat. He asked quietly,
"You looking for someone?"
She cleared her throat. "My sister, the Hind." His chest loosened.
"Over by the foot of the dais, next to Pollux,"